grave that lurked beyond. Stay! I looked up at Tarquin, lip curling back from my teeth, looked at Helion and Theson and Baron and Calais, Vivian weeping at his side, and I snarled, "Bring him back!" Blank faces. I screamed at them, "Bring him back!" Nothing. "You did it for me," I said, breathing hard. "Now do it for him!"
"You were human,"
Helion said carefully.
"It is not the same."
"I don't care! Do it!" When they didn't move, I rallied the dregs of my power, readying to rip into their minds and force them. Not caring what rules or laws it broke, I wouldn't care, only if... Tarquin stepped forward. He slowly extended his hand toward me.
"For what he gave,"
Tarquin said quietly.
"Today, and for many years before."
And as that seed of light appeared in his palm, I began crying again. Watched it drop onto Rhys's bare throat and vanish into the skin beneath, an echo of light flaring once. Helion stepped forward. That kernel of light in his hand flickered as it fell onto Rhys's skin. Then Calais, and Theson, until only Baron stood there. Mor drew her sword and laid it on his throat. He jerked, having not even seen her move. "I do not mind making one more kill today," she said. Baron gave her a withering glare, but shoved off the sword and strode forward. He practically chucked that fleck of light onto Rhys. I didn't care about that either. I didn't know the spell, the power it came from, but I was High Lady. I held out my palm, willing that spark of life to appear. Nothing happened. I took a steadying breath, remembering how it had looked. "Tell me how," I growled to no one. Theson coughed and stepped forward, explaining the core of power and on, and I didn't care, but I listened until... There. Small as a sunflower seed. It appeared in my palm. A bit of me, my life. I laid it gently on Rhys's blood-crusted throat. And I realized, just as he appeared, what was missing. Tamlin stood there, summoned by either the death of a fellow High Lord or one of the others around me. He was splattered in mud and gore, his new bandolier of knives mostly empty. He studied Rhys, lifeless before me. Studied all of us. The palms still out. There was no kindness on his face. No mercy. "Please," was all I said to him. Then Tamlin glanced between us. Me and my mate. His face did not change.
"Please!"
I wept.
I will give you anything!"
Something shifted in his eyes at that. But not kindness. No emotion at all. I laid my head on Rhysand's chest, listening for any kind of heartbeat through that armor.
"Anything?"
I breathed to no one in particular.
"Anything?"
Steps scuffed on the rocky ground. I braced myself for another set of hands trying to pull me away and dug my fingers in harder. The steps remained behind me for long enough that I looked. Tamlin stood there, staring down at me, those green eyes swimming with some emotion I couldn't place.
"Be happy, Feyre,"
he said quietly, and dropped that final kernel of light onto Rhysand. I had not witnessed it when it had been done to me, so all I did was hold on to him, to his body, to the tatters of that bond.
"Stay,"
I begged.
Stay.
Light glowed beyond my shut eyelids.
Stay.
And in the silence, I began to tell him about that first night I'd seen him, when I'd heard that voice beckoning me to the hills, when I couldn't resist its summons, and now I wondered if I had heard him calling for me on Kalan Mai, if it had been his voice that brought me there that night. I told him how I had fallen in love with him, every glance and past note and croak of laughter he coaxed from me. I told him of everything we'd done, and what it had meant to me, and all that I still wanted to do, all the life still left before us. And in return, a thud sounded. I opened my eyes. Another thud. And then, his chest rose, lifting my head with it. I couldn't move, couldn't breathe. A hand brushed my back. Then Reese groaned.
If we're all here, either things went very, very wrong, or very right.
Cassian's broken laugh cracked out of him. I couldn't lift my head, couldn't do anything but hold him, savoring every heartbeat and breath and the rumble of his voice as Reese rasped,
"You lot will be pleased to know my power remains my own. No thieving here." "You do know how to make an entrance," Helion drawled. "Or should I say, exit?"
"You're horrible," Vivian snapped. "That's not even remotely funny." I didn't hear what else they said. Reese sat up, lifting me off him. He brushed away the hair clinging to my damp cheeks.
"Stay with the High Lord," he murmured.
I hadn't believed it until I looked into that face, those star-flecked eyes. Hadn't let myself believe it wasn't anything but some delusion.
"It's real,"
he said, kissing my brow.
"And there's another surprise."
He pointed with a healed hand toward the cauldron.
"Someone fish out dear Amryn before she catches a cold."
Varian whirled toward us, but Mor was sprinting for the cauldron, and her cry as she reached in.
"How?"
"She was there,"
Rhys said.
"When the cauldron was sealing, going wherever we go."
Amryn sputtered water, vomiting onto the rocky ground. Mor thumped her back, coaxing her through it.
"So I reached out a hand,"
Rhys went on quietly,
"to see if she might want to come back."
And as Amryn opened her eyes, as Varian let out a choked sound of relief and joy, I knew what she had given up to come back. High Fae, and just like that. For her silver eyes were solid, unmoving. No smoke, no burning mist in them. A normal life. No trace of her powers to be seen. And as Amryn smiled at me, I wondered if that had been her last gift. If it all had been a gift. Chapter 78. Amongst the sprawling field of corpses and wounded, there was one body I wanted to bury. Only Nesta, Elaine, and I returned to that clearing, once Asriel had given the all-clear that the battle was well and truly over. Letting Rhys out of my sight to wrangle our scattered armies, sort through the living and dead, and figure out some semblance of order was an effort in self-control. I nearly begged Rhys to come with us, so I didn't have to let go of his hand, which I had not stopped clutching since those moments I'd heard his beautiful, solid heartbeat echoing into his body once more. But this task, this farewell, I knew deep down that it was only for my sisters and me. So I released Reese's hand, kissing him once, twice, and left him in the war camp to help Moore haul a barely standing Cassian to the nearest healer. Nesta was watching them when I reached her and Elaine at the tree-lined outskirts. Had she done some healing somehow in these moments after she severed the king's head? Or had it been Cassian's immortal blood and Azrael's battlefield patching that had already healed him enough to manage to stand, even with the wing and leg? I didn't ask my sister, and she supplied no answer as she took the water bucket dangling from Elaine's still bloody hands, and I followed them both through the trees. The King of Hybern's corpse lay in the clearing, crows already picking at it. Nesta spat on it before we approached our father, the crows barely scattered in time. The screams and moaning of the wounded was a distant wall of sound, another world away from the sun-dappled clearing, from the blood still fresh on the moss and grass. I blocked out the coppery tang of it. Cassian's blood. The king's blood. Nesta's blood. Only our father had not bled. He hadn't been given a chance to. And through whatever small mercy of the mother, the crows hadn't started on him. Elaine quietly washed his face, combed out his hair and beard, straightened his clothes. She found flowers, somewhere. She laid them at his head, on his chest. We stared down at him in silence.
"I love you,"
Elaine whispered, voice breaking. Nesta said nothing, face unreadable. There were such shadows in her eyes. I hadn't told her what I'd seen, had let them tell me what they wanted. Elaine breathed.
"Should we say a prayer?"
We did not have such things in the human world, I remembered. My sisters had no prayers to offer him. But in Prithian... "Mother hold you," I whispered, reciting words I had not heard since that day under the mountain. "May you pass through the gates. May you smell that immortal land of milk and honey." Flame ignited at my fingertips. All I could muster. All that was left. "Fear no evil. Feel no pain." My mouth trembled as I breathed. "May you enter eternity." Tears slid down Elaine's pallid cheeks as she adjusted an errant flower on our father's chest, white-petaled and delicate, and then backed away to my side with a nod. Nesta's face did not shift as I sent that fire to ignite our father's body. He was ash on the wind in a matter of moments. We stared at the burned slab of earth for long minutes, the sun shifting overhead. Steps crunched on the grass behind us. Nesta whirled, but... Lucian! It was Lucian! Lucian! Haggard and bloody, panting for breath, as if he'd run from the shore. His gaze settled on Elaine, and he sagged a little, but Elaine only wrapped her arms around herself and remained at my side.
"Are you hurt?"
he asked, coming toward us, spying the blood speckling Elaine's hands. He halted short as he noticed the King of Hybern's decapitated head on the other side of the clearing. Nesta was still showered with his blood. "I'm fine," Elaine said quietly, and then asked, noticing the gore on him, the torn clothes and still bloody weapons. "Are you?"
"Well, I never want to fight in another battle as long as I live, but yes, I'm in one piece."
A faint smile bloomed on Elaine's lips, but Lucian noticed that scorched patch of grass behind us and said,
"I heard. What happened?"
"I'm sorry for your loss. All of you." I just strode to him and threw my arms around his neck, even if it wasn't the embrace he was hoping for. Thank you for coming. With the battle, I mean.
I've got one hell of a story to tell you, he said,
squeezing me tightly.
And don't be surprised if Vasa corners you as soon as the ships are sorted and the sun sets.
Is she really?
Yes, but your father, ever the negotiator.
A sad, small smile toward that burnt grass.
He managed to cut a deal with Vasa's keeper to come here. Temporarily, but better than nothing. But yes, queen by night, firebird by day.
He blew out a breath.
Nasty curse.
The human queens are still out there, I said. Maybe I'd hunt them down.
Not for long. Not if Vasa has anything to do with it.
You sound like an acolyte. Lucian blushed, glancing at Elaine.
She's got a foul temper and a fouler mouth.
He cut me a wry look.
You'll get along just fine.
I nudged him in the ribs. But Lucian again looked at that singed grass, and his blood-splattered face turned solemn.
He was a good man, he said. He loved you all very much.
I nodded, unable to form the words, the thoughts. Nesta didn't so much as blink to indicate she'd heard. Elaine just wrapped her arms tighter around herself, a few more tears streaking free. I spared Lucian the torment of debating whether to touch her, and linked my arm through his as I began to walk away, letting my sisters decide to follow or remain, if they wanted a moment alone with that burnt grass. Elaine came. Nesta stayed. Elaine fell into step beside me, peering at Lucian. He noticed it.
I heard you made the killing blow, he said.
Elaine studied the trees ahead. Nesta did. I just stabbed him. Lucian seemed to fumble for a response, but I said to him,
So, where now? Off with Vasa?
I wondered if he'd heard of Tamlin's role, the help he'd given us. A look at my friend showed me he had. Someone, perhaps my mate, had informed him. Lucian shrugged.
First, here, to help. Then,
another glance at Elaine.
Who knows?
I nudged Elaine, who blinked at me, then blurted, You could come to Valaris. He saw all of it, but nodded graciously.
It would be my pleasure.
As we strode back to the camp, Lucian told us of his time away, how he'd hunted for Vasa, how he'd found her already with my father, an army marching westward, how Miriam and Draken had found them on their own journey to help us. I was still mulling over all he said when I slipped into my tent to finally change out of my leathers, leaving him and Elaine to go find a place to wash up and talk, perhaps. But as I strode through the flaps, sound greeted me within. Talking. Many voices, one of them belonging to my mate. I got one step inside and knew I wouldn't be changing my clothes anytime soon. For seated in a chair before the brazier was Prince Draken, Rhys sprawled and still bloody on the cushions across from him, and on the pillows beside Rhys sat a lovely female, her dark hair tumbling down her back in luscious curls, already smiling at me. Miriam. Chapter 79. Miriam's smiling face was more human than High Fae. But Miriam, I remembered, as she and Draken rose to their feet to greet me, was only half Fae. She bore the delicately pointed ears, but there was something still human about her, and that broad smile that lit up her brown eyes. I instantly liked her. Mud splattered her own leathers, a different make than the Illyrians, but obviously designed by another aerial people to keep warm in the skies. And a few speckles of blood coated the honey-brown skin along her neck and hands. But she didn't seem to notice or care. She held out her hands to me.
"Hi, lady,"
Miriam said, her accent the same as Draken's, rolling and rich. I took her hands, surprised to find them dry and warm. She squeezed my fingers tightly while I managed to say, "I've heard so much about you. Thank you for coming." I cast a look at where Rhys still remained sprawled on the cushions, watching us with raised brows. "For someone who was just dead," I said tightly, "you seem remarkably relaxed." Rhys smirked.
"I'm glad you're bouncing back to your usual spirits, Feyre, darling."
Draken snorted and took my hands, squeezing them as tightly as his mate had.
"What he doesn't want to tell you, my lady, is that he's so damn old he can't stand up right now."
I whirled to Rhys. "Are you..."
"Fine, fine,"
Rhys said, waving a hand, even as he groaned a bit.
"Though perhaps now you see why I didn't bother visiting these two for so long. They're terribly cruel to me."
Miriam laughed, plopping down on the cushions again. "Your mate was in the middle of telling us your story, as it seems you've already heard ours." I had. But even as Prince Draken gracefully returned to his seat and I slid into the chair beside his, just watching the two of them, I wanted to know the entire thing. One day. Not tomorrow or the day after, but one day I wanted to hear their tale in full. But for now, I saw you two battling Jurien. Draken instantly stiffened, Miriam's eyes going shuttered as I asked, Is he dead?
No,
was all Draken said. More, Miriam cut in, frowning, wound up convincing us not to settle things.
They would have. From the expression on Draken's face, the prince still didn't seem convinced.
And from the haunted gleam in Miriam's eyes, it seemed as if far more had occurred during that fight than they let on. But I still asked, "Where is he?" Draken shrugged.
"After we didn't kill him, I have no idea where he slithered off to."
Rhys gave me a half-smile.
"He's with Lord Grayson's men, seeing to the wounded."
Miriam asked carefully, "Are you friends with Jurien?" "No," I said. "I mean, I don't think so, but every word he said was true. And he did help me, a great deal." Neither of them so much as nodded as they exchanged a long glance, unspoken words passing between them. Rhys asked,
"I thought I saw Nefel during the battle. Any chance I'll get to say hello? Or is she too important now to bother with me?"
Laughter, beautiful laughter, danced in his eyes. I straightened, smiling. "She's here?" Draken lifted a dark brow.
"You know Nefel?"
"Know of her," I said, and glanced toward the tent flaps, as if she'd come striding right in. It's a long story."
"We have time to hear it," Miriam said, then added, "Or a bit of time, I suppose."
For there were indeed many, many things to sort out, including... I shook my head. "Later," I said to Miriam, to her mate. "The proof that a world could exist without a wall, without a treaty. There's something..." I relayed my thought down the bond to Rhys, earning a nod of approval before I said, "Is your island still secret?" Miriam and Draken exchanged a guilty look. "We do apologize for that," Miriam offered. "It seems that the glamour worked too well. if it kept well-meaning messengers away. She shook her head, those beautiful curls moving with her. We would have come sooner. We left the moment we realized what trouble you all were in. No, I said, shaking my own head, scrambling for the words. No, I don't blame you. Mother above, we owe you. I blew out a breath. We are in your debt. Draken and Miriam objected to that, but I went on. What I mean is, if there was an object of terrible power that now needed to be hidden, would Cretea remain a good place to conceal it? Again, that look between them. A look between mates. Yes, Draken said. Miriam breathed. You mean the cauldron? I nodded. It had been hauled into our camp, guarded by whatever Illyrians could still stand. None of the other High Lords had asked, for now. But I could see the debate that would rage. The war we might start internally over who exactly got to keep the cauldron. It needs to disappear, I said softly. Permanently, I added, before anyone remembers to lay claim to it. Draken and Miriam considered. Some unspoken conversation passing between them, perhaps down their own mating bond. When we leave, Draken said at last, one of our ships might find itself a little heavier in the water. I smiled. Thank you. When are you exactly planning to leave? Rhys asked, lifting a brow. Kicking us out already, Draken said with a half-smile. A few days, Miriam cut in wryly. As soon as the injured are ready. Good, I said. They all looked at me. I swallowed. I mean, not that I'm glad for you to go. The amusement in Miriam's eyes spread, twinkling. I smiled myself. I want you here, because I'd like to call a meeting. A day later, I didn't know how it had come together so quickly. I'd merely explained what I wanted, what we needed to do, and Rhys and Draken made it happen. There was no proper space to do it. Not with the camps in disarray. But there was one place, a few miles off. And as the sun set, and my family's half-ruined estate became filled with High Lords and princes, generals and commanders, humans and fae, I still didn't have the words to really express it. How we could all gather in the giant sitting room, the only usable space in my family's old estate, and actually have this meeting. I'd slept through the night, deep and undisturbed, Rhys in bed beside me. I hadn't let go of him until dawn had leaked into our tent. And then, the war camps were too full of blood and injured and the dead. And there was this meeting to arrange between various armies and camps and peoples. It took all day, but by the end of it, I found myself in the wrecked foyer, Rhys and the others beside me, the chandelier a broken mass behind us on the cracked marble floor. The High Lords arrived first, starting with Baron. Baron, who did not so much as glance at his son who was not his son. Lucian, standing on my other side, didn't acknowledge Baron's existence either, or Eris's, as he strode a step behind his father. Eris was bruised and cut up enough to indicate he must have been in terrible shape after the fighting ceased yesterday, sporting a brutal slice down his cheek and neck, barely healed. Moore let out a satisfied grunt at the sight of it, or perhaps a sound of disappointment that the wound had not been fatal. Eris continued by as if he hadn't heard it, but didn't sneer at least. Rather, he just nodded at Rhys. It was silent promise enough. Soon. Soon, perhaps, Eris would finally take what he desired, and call in our debt. We did not bother to nod back.
None of us. Especially not Lucian, who continued dutifully ignoring his eldest brother. But as Eris strode by, I could have sworn there was something like sadness, like regret as he glanced to Lucian. Tamlin crossed the threshold moments later. He had a bandage over his neck and one over his arm. He came, as he had to that first meeting, with no one in tow. I wondered if he knew that this wrecked house had been purchased with the money he'd given my father, with the kindness he'd shown them. But Tamlin's attention didn't go to me. It went to the person just to my left, to Lucian. Lucian stepped forward, head high, even as that metal eye whirred. My sisters were already within the sitting room, ready to guide our guests to their predetermined spots. We'd planned those carefully, too. Tamlin paused a few feet away. None of us said a word. Not as Lucian opened his mouth. Tamlin. But Tamlin's attention had gone to the clothes Lucian now wore. The Illyrian leathers. He might as well have been wearing night court black. It was an effort to keep my mouth shut, to not explain that Lucian didn't have any other clothes with him, and that they weren't a sign of his allegiance. Tamlin just shook his head, loathing simmering in his green eyes, and walked past, not a word. I looked at Lucian in time to see the guilt, the devastation flicker in that russet eye. Rhys had indeed told Lucian everything about Tamlin's covert assistance. His help in dragging Baron here? Saving me at the camp? But Lucian remained standing with us as Tamlin found his place in the sitting room to our right. Did not glance at his friend even once. Lucian wasn't foolish enough to beg for forgiveness. That conversation, that confrontation, it would take place at another time. Another day or week or month. I lost track of who filed in afterward. Traken and Miriam along with a host of their people, including... I started at the slight, dark-haired female who entered on Miriam's right, her wings much smaller than the other seraphim. I glanced to where Asriel stood on Rhys's other side, bandaged all over and wings in splints after he'd worked them too hard yesterday. The Shadow Singer nodded in confirmation. Nefel. I smiled at the legendary warrior scribe when she noticed my stare as she passed by. She grinned right back at me. Calais and Vivian flowed in, along with that female who was indeed her sister. Then Tarquin and Varian. Theson and his battered peregrine captain, whose hand he tightly held. Helion was the last of the High Lords to arrive. I didn't dare look through the ruined doorway to where Lucian now stood in the sitting room, close to Elaine's side as she and my sister silently kept against the wall by the intact bay of windows. Baron, wisely, did not approach, and Eris only looked over every now and then to watch. Helion was limping, flanked by a few of his captains and generals, but still managed a grim smile. "Better enjoy this while it lasts," he said to me and Rhys. "I doubt we'll be so unified when we walk out of here."
"Thank you for the words of encouragement," I said tightly, and Helion chuckled as he eased inside. More and more people filled that room, the tense conversation broken up by bursts of laughter or greeting. Rhys at last told our family to head into the room, while he and I waited. Waited and waited. Long minutes. It'd take them longer to arrive, I realized, since they couldn't winnow or move as quickly through the world. I was about to turn into the room to begin without them, when two male figures filled the night-darkened doorway. Jurian and Grayson. And behind them, a small contingent of other humans. I swallowed hard. Now the difficult part would begin. Grayson looked inclined to turn around, the fresh cut down his cheek crinkling as he scowled. But Jurian nudged him in. A black eye bloomed on the left side of Jurian's face. I wondered if Miriam or Draken had given it to him. My money was on the former. Grayson only gave us a tight nod. Jurian smirked at me. I put you on opposite ends of the room, I said. From both Miriam and Draken, and from Elaine. Neither man responded, and only strode proud and tall into that room full of fae. Rhys kissed my cheek and strode in behind them, which left... As Lucien had promised, with darkness now overhead, Vasa found me. The last to arrive. The last piece of this meeting. She stormed over the threshold, breathless and unfaltering, and paused only a foot away. Her unbound hair was a reddish gold, thick dark lashes and brows framing the most stunningly blue eyes I'd ever seen. Beautiful. Her freckled skin, golden brown and gleaming. Only a few years older than me, but young feeling. Cultish. Fierce and untamed, despite her curse. Vasa said in a lilting accent,
Are you Feyre Cursebreaker?
Yes, I said, sensing Rhys listening wryly from the other room, where the rest were now beginning to quiet themselves, to wait for me. Vasa's full mouth tightened.
I am sorry about your father. He was a great man.
Nesta, striding out of the sitting room, halted at the words, looked Vasa up and down. Vasa returned the favor.
You are Nesta,
Vasa declared, and I wondered how my father had described her so that Vasa would know.
I am sorry for your loss, too.
Nesta simply regarded her with that cool indifference.
I heard you slew the King of Highburn, Vasa said, those dark brows narrowing as she again surveyed Nesta,
searching for any sign of a warrior beneath the blue dress she wore. Vasa only shrugged to herself when Nesta didn't reply and said to me,
He was a better father to me than my own. I owe much to him, and will honor his memory as long as I live.
The look Nesta was giving the queen was enough to wither the grass beyond the shattered front door. It didn't get any better, as Vasa said.
Can you break the curse on me, Feyre Archeron?
Is that why you agreed to come so quickly? A half-smile.
Partly. Lucien suggested you had gifts, and other High Lords do as well.
Like his father. His true one, Helion. She went on before I could answer.
I do not have much time left before I must return to the lake, to him.
To the Death Lord who held her leash.
Who is he? I breathed.
Vasa only shook her head, waving a hand as her eyes darkened and repeated,
Can you break my curse?
I don't know how to break those kinds of spells, I admitted. Her face fell. I added,
But we can try.
She considered.
With the healing of our armies, I won't be able to leave for some time. Perhaps it will give me a loophole, as Lucien called it, to remain longer.
Another shake of the head.
We shall discuss this later, she declared, along with the threat my fellow queens pose.
My heart stumbled a beat. A cruel smile curved Vasa's mouth.
They will try to intervene, she said. With any sort of peace talks, Highburn sent them back before this battle, but I have no doubt they were smart enough to encourage that, not to waste their armies here.
That they will elsewhere?
Nesta demanded. Thassa tossed her smooth sheet of hair over a shoulder.
We shall see. And you will think of ways to help me.
I waited until she headed for the sitting room before I flicked my brows up at the order. Either she didn't know or didn't care that I was also a queen in my right. Nesta smirked.
Good luck with that.
I scowled, shoving down the worry already blooming in my gut, and said,
Where are you going? The meeting is starting.
Why should I be in there?
You're the guest of honor. You killed the king.
Shadows flickered in her face.
So what?
I blinked.
You're our emissary as well. You should be here for this.
Nesta looked toward the stairs, and I noticed the object she clutched in her fist. The small wooden carving. I couldn't make out what manner of animal it was, but I knew the wood. Knew the work. One of the little carvings our father had crafted during those years he hadn't done much of anything at all. I looked at her face before she could notice my attention. Nesta said,
Do you think it will work? This meeting?
With so many fey ears in the room beyond, I didn't dare give any answer but the truth.
I don't know, but I'm willing to try.
I offered my hand to my sister.
I want you here for this. With me.
Nesta considered that outstretched hand. For a moment, I thought she'd walk away. But she slid her hand into mine, and together we walked into that room crammed with humans and fey, both parts of this world, all parts of this world. High fey from every court. Miriam and Draken and their retinue. Humans from many territories. All watching me and Nesta as we entered, as we strode to where Rhys and the others waited, facing the gathered room. I tried not to cringe at the shattered furniture that had been sorted through for any possible seats. At the ripped wallpaper, the half-dangling curtains. But it was better than nothing. I supposed the same could be said of our world. Silence settled. Rhys nudged me forward, a hand brushing the small of my back as I took a step past him. I lifted my chin, scanning the room, and I smiled at them, the humans and fey assembled here, in peace. My voice was clear and unwavering.
My name is Feyre Archeron.
I was once human, and now I am fey. I call both worlds my home, and I would like to discuss renegotiating the treaty.
Chapter 80. A world divided was not a world that could thrive. That first meeting went on for hours, many of us short-tempered with exhaustion, but channels were made. Stories were exchanged. Tales narrated of either side of the wall. I told them my story, all of it. I told it to the strangers who did not know me. I told it to my friends. And I told it to Tamlin, hard-faced by the distant wall. I explained the years of poverty, the trails under the mountain, the love I had found and let go, the love that had healed and saved me. My voice did not quaver. My voice did not break. Nearly everything I had seen in the Ouroboros, I let them see it too. Told them. And when I was done, Miriam and Draken stepped forward to tell their own story. Another glimmer of proof that humans and fey could not only work together, live together, but become so much more. I listened to every word of it. I did not bother to brush away my tears at times. I only clutched Rhys's hand and did not let go. There were several others with tales, some that went counter to our own. Relations that had not gone so well. Crimes committed. Hurts that could not be forgiven.
but it was a start. There was still much work to be done, trust to build, but the matter of crafting a new wall... It remained to be seen whether we could agree on that. Many of us were against it. Many of the humans, rightfully so, were wary. There were still other Fae territories to contend with, those who had found Highburn's promises appealing, seductive. The High Lords quarreled the most about the possibility of a new wall, and with every word of it, just as Helion said, that temporary allegiance frayed and snapped. Court lines were redrawn. But at least they stayed until the end, until the early hours of the morning when we finally decided that the rest would be discussed on another day, at another place. It would take time, time, and healing and trust. And I wondered if the road ahead, the road to true peace, would perhaps be the hardest and longest one yet. The others left, winnowing or flying or striding off into the darkness, already peeling back into their groups and courts and war bands. I watched them go from the open doorway of the estate until they were only shadows against the night. I'd seen Elaine staring out the window earlier, watching Grayson leave with his men without so much as look back at her. He had meant every word that day at his keep. Whether he noticed that Elaine still wore his engagement ring, that Elaine stared and stared at him as he walked off into the night, I didn't know. Let Lucian deal with that for now. I sighed, leaning my head against the cracked stone doorframe. The grand wooden door had been shattered completely, the splinters still scattered on the marble entry behind me. I recognized his scent before I heard his easy steps approach. "Where do you go now?" I asked, without looking over my shoulder, as Jurian paused beside me and stared into the darkness. Miriam and Draken had left quickly, needing to tend to their wounded, and to spirit away the cauldron to one of their ships before the other High Lords had a moment to consider its whereabouts. Jurian leaned against the opposite doorframe.
"Queen Vasa offered me a place within her court."
Indeed, Vasa still remained inside, chatting with Lucian animatedly. I supposed that if she only had until dawn before turning back into that firebird, she wanted to make every minute count. Lucian, surprisingly, was chuckling, his shoulders loose and his head angled while he listened. "Are you going to accept?" Jurian's face was solemn, tired.
"What sort of court can a cursed queen have? She's bound to that Death Lord. She has to go back to his lake on the continent at some point."
He shook his head.
"Too bad the king was so spectacularly beheaded by your sister. I bet he could have found a way to break that curse of hers."
"Too bad indeed," I muttered. Jurian grunted his amusement. "Do you think we stand a chance?" I asked, motioning to the human figure still walking far away, back toward the camp. "Of peace between all of us?" Jurian was silent for a long moment.
"Yes," he said softly. "I do."
And I didn't know why, but it gave me comfort. I was still mulling over Jurian's words days later, when that war camp was at last dismantled, when we said our final goodbyes and made promises, some more sincere than others, to see each other again. When my court, my family, winnowed back to Valaris. Sunlight still leaked in through the windows of the townhouse. The scent of citrus and the sea and baked bread still filled every room. And distantly, children were still laughing in the streets. Home. Home was the same. Home was untouched. I squeezed Reese's hand so tightly, I thought he'd complain, but he only squeezed right back. And even though we had all bathed, as we stood there, there was a grime to us, like the blood hadn't entirely washed off. And I realized that home was, indeed, the same, but we, perhaps we were not. Amryn muttered, I suppose I shall have to eat real food now.
A monumental sacrifice, Cassian quipped.
She gave him a vulgar gesture, but her eyes narrowed at the sight of his still bandaged wings. Her eyes, normal silver eyes, slid to Nesta, holding herself by the stairrail, as if she'd retreat to her room. My sister had barely spoken, barely eaten these past few days, had not visited Cassian in his healing bed, still had not talked to me about what had happened. Amryn said to her, I'm surprised you didn't take the king's head back to have stuffed and hung on your wall. Nesta's eyes shot to her. Moor clicked her tongue. Some would consider that joke to be in bad taste, Amryn. I saved your asses. I'm entitled to say what I want. And with that, Amryn stalked out of the house and into the city streets. The new Amryn is even crankier than the old one, Elaine said softly. I burst out laughing. The others joined me, and even Elaine smiled broadly. All but Nesta, who stared at nothing. When the cauldron had been broken, I didn't know if it had broken that power in her too, severed its bond, or if it still lived somewhere within her. Come on, Moore said, slinging her arm around Asriel's shoulders, then one carefully around Cassian's, and leading them toward the sitting room. We need a drink.
We're opening the fancy bottles,
Cassian called over his shoulder to Reese, still limping on that barely healed leg. My mate sketched a subservient bow.
Save a bit for me, at least.
Reese glanced at my sisters, then winked at me. The shadows of battle still lingered, but that wink... I was still shaky with terror that it wasn't real, that it was all some fever dream inside the cauldron.
It is real,
he purred into my mind.
I'll prove it to you later. For hours.
I snorted, and watched as he made an excuse to no one in particular about finding food and sauntered down the hall, hands in his pockets. Alone in the foyer with my sisters, Elaine still smiling a bit, Nesta stone-faced, I took a breath. Lucian had remained behind to help with any of the human wounded still needing fey healing, but had promised to come here when he finished. And as for Tamlin, I hadn't spoken to him, had barely seen him after he'd told me to be happy and given me back my mate. He left the meeting before I could say anything. So I gave Lucian a note to hand to him if he saw him, which I knew he would. There was a stop that Lucian had to make before he came here, he'd said. I knew where he meant. My note to Tamlin was short. It conveyed everything I needed to say. Thank you. I hope you find happiness, too. And I did. Not just for what he'd done for Reese, but... Even for an immortal, there was not enough time in life to waste it on hatred. On feeling it and putting it into the world. So I wished him well, I truly did, and hoped that one day perhaps he would face those insidious fears, that destructive rage rotting away inside him. So, I said to my sisters, what now? Nesta just turned and went up the stairs, each step slow and stiff. She shut her door with a decisive click. Once she got to her bedroom. With Father, Elaine whispered, still staring up those steps.
I don't think Nesta...
I know, I murmured. I think Nesta needs to sort through a lot of it.
Too much of it.
Elaine faced me.
Do we help her?
I fiddled with the end of my braid.
Yes, but not today. Not tomorrow.
I loosed a breath.
When she's ready. When we were ready, too.
Elaine nodded, smiling up at me. And it was tentative joy and life that shone in her eyes. A promise of the future, gleaming and sweet. I led her into the sitting room where Cassian had a bottle of amber-colored liquor in each hand. Azriel was already rubbing his temples, and Moore was grabbing fine-cut crystal glasses off a shelf.
What now?
Elaine mused, at last answering my question from moments ago, as her attention drifted to the windows facing the sunny street. That smile grew bright enough that it lit up even Azriel's shadows across the room.
I would like to build a garden, she declared. After all of this, I think the world needs more gardens.
My throat was too tight to immediately reply, so I just kissed my sister's cheek before I said,
Yes, I think it does.
Chapter 81 Resand. Even from the kitchen I could hear all of them. The lapping of what was surely the oldest bottle of liquor I owned, then the clink of those equally ancient crystal glasses against each other. Then the laughter. The deep rumble. That was Azriel, laughing at whatever Moore had said that prompted her into a fit of it as well. The sound cackling and merry. And then another laugh. Silvery and bright, more beautiful than any music played at one of Valaris's countless halls and theaters. I stood at the kitchen window, staring at the garden in full summer splendor, not quite seeing the blooms Elaine Archeron had tended these weeks, just staring and listening to that beautiful laugh, my mate's laugh. I rubbed a hand over my chest at that sound. The joy in it. Their conversation flitted past, falling back into old rhythms and yet close. We had all come so close to not seeing it again. This place. Each other. And I knew that the laughter, it was in part because of that too. In defiance and gratitude.
You coming to drink, or are you just going to stare at the flowers all day?
Cassian's voice cut through the melody of sounds. I turned, finding him and Azriel in the kitchen doorway, each with a drink in hand. A second lay in Azriel's other scarred hand. He floated it over to me on a blue-tinged breeze. I clasped the cool, heavy crystal tumbler. Sneaking up on your High Lord is ill-advised. I told them, drinking deeply. The liquor burned its way down my throat, warming my stomach.
It's good to keep you on edge in your old age, Cassian said, drinking himself.
He leaned against the doorway.
Why are you hiding in here?
Azriel shot him a look, but I snorted, taking another sip.
You really did open the fancy bottles.
They waited. But Feyre's laugh sounded again, followed by Elaine's and Moore's. And when I dragged my gaze back to my brothers, I saw the understanding on their faces. It's real, Azriel said softly. Neither laughed or commented on the burning in my eyes. I took another drink to wash away the tightness in my throat and approached them.
Let's not do this again for... Another 500 years,
I said a bit hoarsely, and clinked my glass against theirs. Azriel cracked a smile as Cassian lifted a brow.
And what are we gonna do until then? Beyond brokering peace, beyond those queens who were sure to be a problem, beyond healing.